Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome one and all to Trisha's True Crime Radio. Now, I like to get the goo, the legal goo, out of the way. Opinions expressed on Trisha's True Crime Radio are those of the hosts and guests, and do remember this. Trisha's True Crime Radio is a completely separate entity from WebSleuth.com LLC and ForumsForJustice.org. In other words, my darling angels, if you get upset at something, you don't take it out on WebSleuth or Forums for Justice. You come to me and we'll work it out, okay? Okay. Trisha's True Crime Radio is brought to you by your local no-kill animal shelter. Go to www.nokillnetwork.org and find your local no-kill shelter, and you can do something as easy as volunteering an hour a week to help out. That's www.nokillnetwork.org. Beth Karras is our guest tonight. Beth is now with wildabouttrial.com. Are you wild? Do you want to know about trials? Then by golly, you go to www.wildabouttrial.com because it's for you. Beth will be with us here in just a second, but I want to tell you about something first. If you watched Beth Karras' spreecast on Wild About Trial, Beth talked about the defense and the Jody Arias retrial for the sentencing phase. The defense wants to be allowed to monitor the Twitter accounts of the jurors. And I agree with Beth. I don't think the judge will allow this. And maybe the judge will tell the jurors they can't even use social media to discuss the trial at all during the trial. Twitter is such a powerful tool in the social media scene. It's powerful because you can hide behind Twitter and say what you want. People become very brave when they don't use their real names. I would love to see the looks on certain people's faces if their identity were to be exposed. Let's just say for a moment that I was queen of the world and I made all the rules. One of the rules I would make is this. If you're going to tweet something that is not an absolute fact, you have to use your real name and a real picture of yourself. You would suddenly see all these stupid Twitter warriors becoming quiet little bunnies hopping off the internet because they don't have the courage to use their real names when they tweet. That's just one of my many, many fantasies, being queen of the world and making the jerks on Twitter use their real name. Now, I do have other fantasies, but I only rarely share them with my therapist, because when I do, he charges me extra, whatever. Hey, tonight we welcome back one of our favorite people, Beth Karras. Beth can be found on wildabouttrial.com, a great site. If you haven't been there yet, you got to check it out. It has all the trials that we're interested in. Beth, welcome back to Trisha's True Crime Radio. Beth, are you there? Oh, yeah. Hold on.
Hello.
Hi, now Chris, you're there.
You
Hi, Beth.
Me?
I can hear
Hi.
You now. Welcome. Welcome, my dear. How are you?
It's good to be back. I'm great. I'm enjoying my work with Wild About Trial. It's not full-time work. I mean, I'm a contributor and legal analyst for them. But, it keeps me out there, and I do something at least once or twice a week for them. But I'm continuing to try to reinvent myself, and good things are in store. For example, I'll be on TV this week. I'll be on Nancy Grace. I think tomorrow is Nancy, mm-hmm. not Jane Velez Mitchell. And I have an interview with the Oxygen show called Snapped on Tuesday for their Jody Arias. I think they're going to do a two-hour show on Jody Arias. So they're interviewing me for it. Yes.
Wonderful. So, well, you don't need to reinvent yourself. We love you as you are, but we will help you reinvent yourself to the wildly loving general public that adores you. I mean, you don't realize just how much you are loved, I'm telling you. By far, when we have you on this show, it's one of our biggest shows every single time. So, Beth, you say you're a contributor to wildabouttrial.com. What are you working on now, specifically?
Well, I submitted some Aaron Hernandez stuff to them, but it wasn't on, it's not on under the Wild About Trial tab. There's Wild About Beth tab within Wild About Trial, and my contributions are there. I mean, I wrote an opinion piece on Zimmerman explaining why the jury followed the law and mm-hmm. explaining how they came up with that verdict. It is, they followed the law, and I actually don't think Stand Your Ground applied in these particular facts. The spreecast I just did, which is an online live video cast with Jane Velez Mitchell for 45 minutes the other night, is on there. Coming up, I don't really have any. I wrote an article about an Illinois case, a mother who's indicted for obstruction of justice for taking her daughter, who was 13 at the time, to have an abortion. So that's I'm not using any names, and it's a pending case, and it's an interesting issue. I don't really think they have a provable case against the mother, so I wrote that last week for them. So I'm sort of snooping around. I'm actually going to be on vacation starting Wednesday. I'm going to San Diego to meet some friends and hang out, so I probably won't be contributing this week. You know what, Tricia, I wanted to say something, two things before you start asking me questions. I wanted to just mention that tomorrow is the third anniversary of the death of a dear friend of mine and a friend, I'm sure a lot of web sleuths folks, and that's Dominic Dunn.
Yeah.
He died 3 years ago tomorrow, and I'm going to repost a blog that I wrote after his burial. I went to his funeral, and then there was a more intimate gathering a few days later at his Connecticut home, and his ashes were buried. We all walked to a little sort of country cemetery up the road from his house. He had a beautiful country house, which has been sold. So anyway, I just kind of reminisced about him afterwards, and that blog was posted on the In Session site, and I'm just going to repost it tomorrow on my Facebook, just in memory of Dominic. That, and the other thing I wanted to say is congratulations to Web Sleuth, because I'm just on the last pages of a new book called Lost Girls, based on the women in Long Island, the unsolved case of the five women in Long Island. And, you know, the second half of the book mentions Web Sleuth quite a bit.
I'm aware of that, and I'm telling you, we have got great Web Sleuth members that are absolutely amazing. I always say that, you know, web sleuths, we're there, and it's everybody else who just comes and starts working. We don't ask anybody to come, but they just show up and start doing the work, and especially on the Long Island serial killer case. We have some great posters who have been there from the beginning and who really go and dig deep. And I remember the author, I believe, contacting me and asking me, you know, can we talk to some of these people? And yes, I know the book is out. In fact, I hopefully will have the author on very soon to talk about. But that
good.
Is a very good book. Yeah, it's a great book. So
you know, it's really well written. I mean, I don't know what is new in the book, but because I didn't follow. I mean, I was following the case a little bit, but then a lot of stuff was developed in 2011, and I was on the road constantly that year. I was at James Ray's, the Sweat Lodge manslaughter trial. I was at Casey Anthony. I was at Warren Jeffs, Conrad Murray, Sandusky, Penn State. I was just on the road constantly when there were developments in 2011. So I just didn't stay on top of all the details, and this book was a good review for me. But he really delves into the lives of each of the five women. And I found it really compelling to learn about, you know, her early life, her family, her loved ones, and how each one of them came to the life that, you know, that they were leading at the time of becoming escorts. So, and no one wanted to be in that. You know, they were desperate for money. It was easy money, and, you know, end of story. So it's very well written, much more compelling than I thought. You never know, and I downloaded it electronically, so I'm 92% through it. I'll finish it after we hang up.
Yeah, that's great. It is a good book, and that you bring up a good point. The women that have been killed were all escorts, prostitutes, and nobody starts out with that dream to become a prostitute. So I'm sure every one of those women's story is very compelling as to how they ended up where they did. And tragic, all of them, very, very tragic. With us also is my official unofficial co-host, Michael in Minnesota. Michael, welcome to the show. Say hi to Beth.
Hi, Beth. Hi, Tricia.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi, Michael. You know you've been on my mind these past few days. I meant to email you today, so it's great to talk to you. I will still email you after, though.
Oh, thank you.
This sounds juicy.
So nice.
Oh, I can't wait. Maybe we can do a whole episode on Michael's emails. That'd be good. Okay, here's the scoop. Let's talk about this Spreecast. If you missed it, that Beth did, it was fantastic. We're talking with Beth Karras, wildabouttrial.com. And if you go to Wild About Trial, you find Beth right there and click on the Spreecast. She did a great interview with Jane Velez Mitchell. Now, Jane Velez has a book out about the Jodi Arias trial. And that was the whole interview was about the book. It's called Exposed, The Secret Life of Jodi Arias. And I found it very compelling because I thought, gosh, is there anything to write about? But it really sounds, what impressed me about the interview is the fact that this book really sets a record straight about who Travis Alexander was. Right, Beth?
Yes, indeed. You know, I spent the month of June helping on the book. I was a consultant and fact checker. I wasn't one of the writers who would rewrite certain sections, but really I was a fact checker. So I read it like three times over the course of the May and June. Once I got back to the city, it was nothing. You know, after I got back to New York from Jody Arias, I did nothing but that book for the month of June, helping Jane and HarperCollins. And I really like the way it's structured because it goes, it starts, you know, with, you know, the body being found, and then it goes back in time to Travis's early life and Jody's early life, and then it will go forward in time. And so I think it's a really a compelling read. Now, I've been reading reviews. I'm monitoring the book sales. It's doing very well, but some people say nothing new. But you know what? If there's nothing new in there to you, then you're a person who, you know, sits and watches everything possible about the trial. But there were interviews that Jane did of people in Travis Alexander's life that she was conducting while I was at the courthouse. But, you know, I would do a live shot, and then I might leave my chair, and then I'm off doing something else, and I don't hear the rest of the interviews. But if you're sitting in front of a television and you're watching the entire trial, and then you're watching HLN through 10 p.m., through Dr. Drew, maybe you've heard most things that are written in the book, but there were things that were new to me. I actually talked about something in this precast that isn't in the book.
And what's that?
I talked to both of Travis Alexander's roommates. Okay, they did not testify, Zach Billings and Enrique Cortez. And Enrique and I stay in touch more so than Zach Billings. I mean, we're still in touch today. And I talked to him about the day of the murder, because he told the police he always got home between 6 and 6:30. And I've read the police reports related to his interviews with the police. He can't say exactly what time he got home on June 4th, but it was between 6 and 6:30. The accidental photo with Jody's foot in the foreground and Travis's neck already slashed, and she's going to turn him around and drag him down and stuff him in the shower and wash him off and try to clean up a little bit and clean herself up so she doesn't track any blood in the house and get out of there. I mean, that was 5:32 when that accidental photo was taken. So in 28 minutes, that's the earliest Enrique is expected home. But and assuming she knew that, and I would expect she did know, because she wasn't killing Travis in the night because her roommates were home, and even between 3 and 4, Zach Billings was home, by the way, between 3 and 4 in the afternoon. So she's killing him when nobody is home, and she's got to get out of there between 6 and 6:30. Enrique told me he doesn't remember any sort of strange car, you know, in the driveway, so maybe she's already gone by then, or she's parked it, not at the house, but somewhere, you know, a couple doors away, around the corner. And most importantly, I said to him, was the washing machine going? And he said no. He said the washing machine wasn't going, and he said, and I think she might have still been in the house, and she might have been hiding, because he made a beeline for his room. He didn't know the common areas of the house, and she probably knew his behavior. So Zach and Enrique were boarders more than they were like roommates. They were boarders. They weren't Travis's friends. So he made a beeline for his room, and it's possible Travis's office was right there downstairs on the ground floor level, not far from the laundry room, and then the door out to the garage is right off of the laundry room. So she could have been in his office because the door was closed. And the door was closed, you know, when the police came. When 5 days later, when Zach went to get the key, he didn't know if there was a key to the locked bedroom, by the way. He was just sort of looking through Travis's things, and he went through into the office, and the door had been closed. So I found it really interesting because he seemed pretty confident that the washing machine was not running. Now, she would not have thrown the camera and the clothes in the washing machine immediately, right? She would have thrown the stuff, not at 5:35, for example. I mean, she's still doing stuff in the bathroom. So she would have thrown the stuff in the washer closer to 6 if she's really moving fast. And the cycle, depending on if it was a small, medium, or large load, we never heard what the settings were. I'm sure they took photographs. I guess I could look through the photos to see what the setting was on. at the time the police, you know, took the photo. But that was just, it's just a little tidbit that the jury didn't know. It's actually not in the book, which I found interesting, you know.
Very interesting. Beth, yeah. I have a question. There had been talk about Jody putting up the doggy gate so Napoleon could not go upstairs. Gate up when Zach got home?
When Enrique was the first one home. Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yes,
when
that's
Enrique
in the police report.
Home?
No, yes, it is. Yes, it was. When both, yes. I actually have the police report. And I have to see whose interview. It might have been Zach's interview or Enrique. One of them, because, you know, they weren't interviewed for 5 days. And, of course, they take the gate down. But what they said, and, again, I believe it was Enrique, but it could have been Zach. And, well, Zach didn't get home until 9 o'clock that night. Enrique was home earlier. Three things. The floor cleaner was out on the middle of the floor in the living room. Both of them found it a little odd, but also they knew it was new and maybe Travis was planning to clean the floor. Right? So the floor cleaner downstairs. The banister was a little bit wet or slippery. So, and it wasn't described as, well, it could have been water, but it was just wet or slippery. So it could have been either polish or wet. So maybe if it was Jody, she just, like, took a towel and just ran it down, you know, as she was running down the stairs. And the gate was over the stairs, which was really strange to them because, there was one other thing, too, because Travis always let Napoleon have free run of the house. So that's absolutely true. And this is stuff the jury didn't hear. I'm not sure if that's in the book. And the front door, let's see, one of the doors, the door he normally went in was locked. Maybe I think it was the front door was locked, which he also said was unusual. So there were those signs. You know, the guys, both of them originally told the police that it was Thursday, June 5th. So the police were operating under the assumption for a couple of days that he was killed on the 5th until on June 19th they were able to get the deleted photos recovered and the date stamp of June 4th was on there, including, you know, the accidental photos. So they knew he died the 4th, not the 5th. So both Zachary and Enrique were confused. They obviously had to amend their statements to say, okay, it was Wednesday, not Thursday, because one of them, I think it was Zach Billings, thought that he had seen Travis on Thursday the 5th coming downstairs on the telephone, but that would be totally consistent with Travis getting up early in the morning on the 4th and coming downstairs on the phone to talk to someone while Jody's still upstairs sleeping. Nobody ever saw Jody, by the way, in the house when she, you know, when she arrived at, like, 4 in the morning.
Right.
But they did see him Wednesday morning, or Zach did. Anyway, they were confused. And probably Juan Martinez didn't call them because there was that confusion, and they just couldn't be certain. Although they hadn't washed their clothes for 5 days, right? If they had washed their clothes, they would have emptied out the washing machine. That washing machine was intact for 5 days. And Zach had done his laundry earlier the day that Travis was killed. I think he said he did his clothes, his wash on the 4th, because he was home earlier in the day. So that's a little bit of new stuff.
That is really interesting, actually. And it's just, I was looking at the chat room, Beth, while you're talking about that. We were just saying how absolutely creepy it is to think that Jody Arias was in that house while Travis's two roommates were home. His dead body is there, and she's creeping around, and she starts the washer before she leaves.
One roommate. Zach was gone by then. Between 4 p.m. and 9 p.m., Zach was gone. But, yeah, one roommate. I mean, that's Enrique telling me the washer wasn't going, and he thinks she was hiding in the house. I mean, we don't know for sure, and unless Jody were to tell us, but she was in a fog, so she can't tell
that's
us, right?
Big fog,
she
big fog.
She doesn't know.
Right.
The most
functional
fog known to man, I think.
Yeah.
Oh, we do have a couple of questions from the chat room, Beth. Is Wild About Trial covering the Jody hearing tomorrow?
Yeah, I think so.
Good.
Assuming there's a camera there, they should be. I do know that In Session has sent a producer, Grace Long, is out there. So, yeah, I'm assuming it's all televised.
I had read on Wild About Trial, Beth, on their tweets, that cameras won't be allowed, but they'll be covering it.
Okay. Interesting. So, I wasn't sure about that, and I know that Kirk Nurmi has filed a motion to preclude cameras for the retrial.
And
what
is your thought? What is your thought on that? That's another question that somebody had.
What is your thought on that? I think cameras will be allowed. I don't think that the judge is going to – I just don't see her banning them. I mean, there was nothing that the camera did in the courtroom that caused a problem in the trial. However, you could argue that because it was televised and more widely seen than otherwise, Alice LaViolette's, you know, the death threats, all that, that's a problem. It's not the camera's fault. It's the fault of people making those threats on social media. So I haven't read Kirk Nurmi's motion. I know he's filed it, but I don't have a copy of it yet. So I'm assuming that he talked about LaViolette, Dr. Samuels, you know, and it's just the venom that was spewed out there toward especially LaViolette, who had real, you know, physiological issues as a result of it. You know, and I just wish that, you know, people, you can despise her all you want, but don't threaten her.
Leave her alone, for God's sake.
Right, you know?
Exactly.
So, especially if it's going to ruin our chances for getting cameras. I think the judge is going to allow cameras, but listen, judges can do what they want. Okay, only in Florida, basically. Cameras are allowed in Florida unless there's a darn good reason not. And that's not the case everywhere else. There's a lot of discretion for the judge, but I'm still optimistic she'll allow the camera.
Did they ever find out?
I'm sorry, Tricia.
Oh, that's okay.
I wanted to ask you about the motion about the Twitter and the fact that Tara was Twittering. What do you make of that motion? Do you think she can compel the prospective jurors to turn over their Twitter accounts?
No, Michael, I don't. Because there are some real privacy issues here. I think that what the judge needs to do is be more specific in her admonition to jurors, because that alternate who was posting and tweeting knew that she wasn't supposed to talk about the trial, but she still thought she could say innocuous things, just nothing of real substance.
What did she say? Do you know?
Yeah, I have the motion. Do you have it too, Michael?
I've seen it. She talked about Jody's, maybe that's the reason for her hot temper, if she was someone had tweeted to her, Arias obviously isn't Mexican, and she said, well, maybe that would explain her hot temper.
Oh, okay.
Ha, 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 or something. So
yeah,
there was mention
like
of Jody, right, but it wasn't. It's just right, but who knew? We never, the jurors weren't shown, and so it would have had to have been someone in Tara Kelly's circle who knew she was sitting on the jury, because none of us knew any identities of jurors at that point.
Right.
Well, one of the people that she tweeted on, it's very faint, the date I'm looking at, it was Mark Iglarsh, who appears on Dr. Drew all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
yeah, so that was, it was in March. March 29.
Do you remember any of the other ones, Beth? Or do you have the list in front of you? I'm just curious as to what she was tweeting. It was just probably nothing really to do with the trial directly, it sounds like. No evidence, nothing, just maybe comments here and there, like you said, really just kind of blasé, nothing too exciting.
Yeah, nothing too exciting. Well, to Mark Iglarsh and a couple other people, she wrote, "You can use social media but cannot talk about trial." Exclamation point. And
which is not true, right?
Which is not true. She shouldn't. Well, I mean, you can't. No, they can use social media. They can't post about the trial. They're not banned altogether, although maybe the judge would do that. Maybe the judge could say, look, you give me your Twitter handles. I'm not giving it to the lawyers, but my deputies are going to monitor it. But if the lawyers have a reason to believe that someone might be posting, there would be an in-camera only, a judge-only review of the tweets. I just cannot see the judge turning over all this information from all the jurors to the defense attorneys, because they would see, you know, personal stuff you tweet out there. However, if you're going to tweet under your own name, anyone could follow you and see it. If you're tweeting under a different identity, or some nickname, It's not obvious, but like I tweet under Beth Kara, so I really have no privacy there. I mean, anybody could follow me. Okay, so
yeah.
The argument is pretty weak for me. But if your Twitter handle is not your name, then
right.
I just don't see the judge doing it. But we'll see. She has to be more specific in her instruction to the jury, though.
Right.
Because
I thought daily she needed to be a little more stern about the admonition, especially since they weren't sequestered. Is Tara likely to be in trouble for her tweets?
No,
I
don't think so. She was, it seems pretty genuine, her misunderstanding, and she wasn't a deliberating juror.
Right.
Yeah, so that really does help. Do we know whatever happened to Dr. Jean DeMarte's laptop, whoever took it? Do we find out anything?
No, and the last I dug into that, I was still in Phoenix, and the police department would not give me any information about it. It was a pending case, and they just wouldn't tell me anything.
That is just so bizarre.
Yeah.
That is really strange.
Is there a witness list for the next trial? I've heard rumors that Alice LaViolette will again appear. And are the experts allowed to embellish or further investigate their case? For example, could Alice LaViolette speak to Chris and Sky about the emails she went on about at this point? Or could Dr. DeMarte choose to find out more than the testimony that we heard in the first trial? Or does all investigative stuff stop?
No, they can. They can continue. But if their testimony differs in any significant way from the first trial, then they're going to be impeached about it, unless there's some good explanation for it. If it's different, it's okay if it just expounds and explains further the position they took at the first trial. But if it's if there's a significant difference, then that could hurt them. But they could continue to investigate.
I was so troubled by those emails and all LaViolette made of them, the words of Chris and Sky, and having spoken at length to Chris and Sky about those emails, I really wish someone had called one of them or both of them to tell exactly what the content of those emails was. To dispel the way Dr. LaViolette, Alice LaViolette, made them sound.
Right, her interpretation
now,
of them,
exactly.
You know,
that's why I was wondering, could Juan choose, even though he didn't in the first trial, to call different witnesses to maybe clear up areas that could have been an area of confusion for jurors?
Yes, absolutely. Now, don't forget, this retrial is just the penalty phase, but it is going to look like the guilt phase, too, even though this next jury has to accept the verdict of the first jury. A lot of the testimony in the guilt phase is relevant for the penalty phase. You have to understand the heinousness of the crime, even though heinous was thrown out as an aggravator, but you have to understand exactly what went down in that bedroom. And then from Jody's point of view, you have to understand their whole relationship, because abuse was one of her mitigators, unless she's going to take a different tack this time. I mean, maybe they're going to concede borderline personality disorder and use that as a mitigator and say, look, you know, yeah, she's mentally ill. And, you know, the law is, the U.S. Supreme Court has said that when you have a really low IQ, we cannot put to death people with a low IQ, basically the intellectual deficiency or mental retardation.
Mm-hmm.
Jody is hardly that, right? She's got a high IQ. She used to, you know, she thinks she's the smartest person in the room at any given time. And so mental illness does not mean somebody, just because they're mentally ill, can't qualify or be put to death.
Right.
And a personality disorder is different, isn't it?
It is. It's not a mental illness. Well, what I understand, it's not a mental illness in that it can't be treated with drugs. If you have a personality disorder, you can't take antidepressants to make it better. And so that's kind of how they differentiate between that and a depression, say, or you know, bipolar disorder. It's different in that way. I'm not sure how the law looks at it. Do you know, Beth, how the law treats personality disorders? Do they treat it like a mental illness?
Well, I do think that, yes, that said, it's a mental disorder. It's a psychological disorder. So from a lawyer's point of view, the defense could use it as a mitigator to say, look, you know, her brain is just not wired the same as yours or mine. And it's not her fault. This is the way, you know, she was born, if it's an organic problem. I'm not sure it's an organic problem. But they could just, you know, fashion an argument that her life should be spared. I mean, she's, you know, just not right in the head. However,
right.
I don't know that that's a winning argument.
Exactly.
They could.
I've never understood why, what about this case and crime, what kind of judge could have taken heinousness off the table? If a crime has ever been heinous, it seems like this one. Can you define heinous and explain why this did not fit in this case?
It's a really good question, Michael, and depraved. Heinous and depraved were both taken off the table by a previous judge. Her name was Duncan. And each, especially cruel, heinous, depraved, are defined terms under Arizona law. So they're actually definitions that come from cases, and I don't have the definitions in front of me because my box is now in storage of the case. but I will email it to you, and you can say it next week on air if you want.
All right. Okay, good.
The decision. I could email you the decision of Judge Duncan, where she goes through what heinous is, what depraved is, and what cruel is, and why only especially cruel remains. So she went through a whole analysis, and that was a couple of years before the trial.
Right.
Judge,
did you agree with it as you read it, Beth? Did you agree with
really.
Her decision when you read it?
No, I've never seen a state do that. Usually the aggravating factor or circumstance that goes to the jury is heinous, atrocious, and cruel, or heinous, depraved, and cruel. You know, those three words, a version of whatever, there are four words, but every state that has a death penalty uses three of those four words as one of their aggravators. And I've never seen any state in any capital case that I've covered take out one or two of those words and say, oh, heinous doesn't apply, depraved doesn't apply, cruel doesn't apply, torturous.
Mm-hmm.
I've just not seen that. So I didn't agree, period, with it.
No.
However, you know, she has a rationale for it, and, you know.
Did Juan argue it? Do you remember?
Yes. He did, but it was before I was in Phoenix covering the case because it was a couple years ago. But he clearly opposed it. But she, you know, thank goodness from Juan Martinez's perspective, that one aggravating circumstance remained. It is one. It's F6. The subdivision F6 of that particular statute is this heinous, depraved, especially cruel, heinous, depraved. And so it's not three aggravators, those three words. It's just one aggravator, but, you know, two adjectives were taken out. Yeah, he argued against it, but Judge Duncan,
it's very bizarre.
You know, said.
We're talking with Beth Karras. Beth Karras, you can find Beth at wildabouttrial.com. Beth, we do have a few more questions from our chat room. When do you reasonably believe the jury selection and retrial will start?
I know that Judge Stevens really wants to start it this fall, because when the trial ended in May, my prediction was January 2014. But I do think that the judge is going to get it going this fall. Now, with that said, I think the measure is going to be whenever the trial transcript has been fully transcribed, 5 months, and I understand that it's close to being completed. The court reporter has to work on his own time in the evening and weekends preparing this, because he's got to be in court during the day doing his day job. And it's a really cumbersome task. So then the defense is going to need some time to work with it, because it's going to be hundreds of pages in length. Now, it's not like a page in a book. You know, a page in a transcript you can read in 45 seconds. But still, it's a lot to call through and then, you know, pull out the stuff you might want to use on cross-examination or you know, be ready to prepare your witness for cross. So there's I don't know, 3 weeks after the transcript is ready, if the defense could be ready, are they going to ask for 2 months after the transcript is ready? But let's just say, for the sake of argument, that the transcript is finished by Labor Day.
Okay.
Now, will it be 4 weeks, the end of September, early October? Is that enough for the defense? You know, the judge may say, that's it. You're getting 4 weeks to work with a transcript. You know this case inside out. You've already had the last few months. So, you know, four weeks is plenty of time for you to work with a transcript. We're starting this October 1st, something like that. I could see that happening.
That'll be very interesting.
In a month.
That I hope she does, because for the Alexanders and Travis's loved ones, they don't need any more prolonged time spans, especially if it goes through the Christmas holidays. My gosh, we don't need that at all. We have one more question here, Beth. Do you know if Jody is in solitary confinement? There is a rumor out there that she is.
Yes, my understanding is she's still in the same position she was in after being found guilty of first-degree murder, which means she's in the same size cell she's been in, but she's alone. And she's out of her cell 1 hour a day. And she's not in general population. So I have not spoken with the sheriff's office in the last few weeks, but I can confirm that. But that's the policy. She's now convicted first-degree murderer. Even though she hasn't been sentenced, she hasn't been transferred to state prison, things changed for her in terms of housing. That was my understanding.
I have a question regarding these transcripts. Can the court reporter be handing over transcripts as he finishes, like week one, week two, or do they have to be handed over as a complete transcript of the court?
Michael, you're so good. Okay, first of all, during the course of a trial, if attorneys can afford it and if the county will pay for it, in this case it would be the county paying for it, daily transcripts are ordered. So in a lot of trials I've covered, the attorneys are getting daily copy. It's called daily copy. But that's really expensive because then you've got two reporters going in and out like every hour. They're switching off. So you got two people assigned to the trial, and when one is in the courtroom, the other one's out there transcribing what they just did. And so they can have daily copy ready for that night for the attorneys to work with and have in court the next day. Now, that did not happen in this case. That's really expensive, and then they're getting it daily. But I'm not aware of anyone getting it piecemeal, like week by week, piecemeal. It has to be reviewed, and it has to be certified. And I think
I think
they might be looking at it for review to see if there's any obvious errors, but it gets certified only later when it's completed. So,
now, we won't see those transcripts as the public until the next trial is done, correct? So they're sealed?
Oh, yeah, no. You know, transcripts are available to the public for purchase. But they're really expensive.
I was going to say they're very expensive. It's very expensive. We do have a question from the chat room. Beth, do you know how Travis's family is holding up?
You know, I haven't been in touch with anyone for about 3 weeks, but they're doing okay. I mean, everyone's back in California. They have their civil attorney, who is really their spokesperson, in Phoenix. And they're very much looking forward to the retrial. They're going to be there. They're committed to this. They do not want death taken off the table. And this is my understanding from at least one family member. So, you know,
that holding up, I guess, is best as to be expected. I mean, they're real people with real problems in their life. And Michael, you might can talk to that a little bit. So, how are Chris and Sky Hughes holding up? They're two of our favorites, too.
Yeah, well, you know, truthfully, it's difficult for everyone. They want to support the family of the Alexander family. But many people have expressed a desire that it just be done for everyone's sake. I think everyone's major concern, and Beth can speak to this, is though an ultimate death verdict would give them some satisfaction, the problem with that is the automatic appeals, and they won't be able to rest. It's going to keep haunting them for all these eternity until the appeals are worn out, and God forbid one of the appeals is successful. So I think, I know that they're supportive of the Alexanders, however concerned at the same time, because they're wondering if they're sure of what they want and what they're going to get. That's a safe way of putting it.
Beth, do you think that it would, if she, Jody does get death, that it is just going to, well, it will be just appeal after appeal, and then won't they just worry and stress? I mean, this poor family and the friends of Travis, it just, it's heartbreaking.
Well, you know, if she goes to death row, you know, maybe they'll just, like, forget about her and just forget about her. I've spoken to Scott Peterson's mother. I wrote a little piece based on a conversation with Sharon Roach on the 10-year anniversary of Lacey Peterson's disappearance, and which was this past December. And she just tries not to even think about him. She just puts him out of her mind, just because, you know, it's just such a long saga. The fact is that appeals take so long in California, and so few people are executed. Sometimes they'll go a year with no executions.
Right.
That an inmate has a better chance of dying of natural causes on death row than the needle. So it will cost the taxpayers millions of dollars.
Mm-hmm.
The appeals. Oh, I'm sorry. She's not California.
Arizona.
Arizona. But it will.
It's pretty much the same. It's pretty much the same, except for in Texas and Florida. Everywhere else takes a long time to put people to death. So,
Question for Beth.
Yes,
Tricia.
Go right ahead.
We had Wendy Murphy on our show, and she has pontificated that it was a strategic move by the defense to not put on mitigating witnesses so that would be grounds for an appeal down the road. And I found that to be completely absurd, but she is convinced that the Ninth Circuit, who will eventually hear these appeals, is known for overturning convictions based on mitigators.
Okay. Well, she's right about the Ninth Circuit. The Ninth Circuit will reverse capital cases whenever they can. That's absolutely true. But it is not true that it was a strategic decision, at least my understanding. I was in the courtroom. I saw the witnesses who arrived to testify in the mitigation
phase. Carol was right there.
Yeah.
I didn't understand it.
Yes. There was, yes, and, you know, stuff went on in chambers that, you know, that the public doesn't know, and there were reasons why these witnesses were not called. So,
Well, we did get a taste of that, though, in open court when Juan spoke about, for example, the girlfriend, Patty, and her possible criminal culpability or whatever.
Correct.
So
we did
hear parts of that.
Yes,
and
scared her off, and she also she did feel bad for Travis's family. And so, you know, she felt torn. Like, she's going to get up there and plead for Jody's life. She's like, wait a second, Jody, you did this to this guy. So she was touched.
Right.
That is something. That would be very difficult if you were close to Jody and knew what she did. I can't imagine anybody being able to do it. Now, if this jury that is chosen, and they hear all the evidence, if they're undecided, then it's up to the judge. Is that correct? And can the judge sentence her to death?
No.
No.
Yes, it's up to the judge, and no, she cannot sentence her to death. The state gets two shots at getting the death penalty for Jody. And if they get a hung jury the second time around, then it's a life sentence, and then the judge will decide which of two possible life sentences, without parole or with release after 25 years.
Got it.
I think that the judge would keep her in for life.
Yes, I would think so.
And the judge knows everything that was not allowed into the trial.
Correct.
So there's no way for her to erase that from her mind.
There's
no way she would give her any parole. I really feel strongly. I do happen to know that part of the Alexanders and the Hughes and everybody's wish for the death penalty is not so much that she gets the death penalty, but it's her living conditions. Knowing Jody, she will make the best of her circumstances if she is allowed to be in general population, and she'll be queen of court. And no one wants to see her able to work her wiles on general population.
For her to enjoy herself. She'll enjoy
right.
herself because she'll have an audience. And that just doesn't
right.
seem right. Just absolutely doesn't seem right. Do you know if the Arias, excuse me, not the Arias family, pardon me, Travis's family, the Alexander family, if they are going to file a wrongful death suit against Jody, just like Sharon did against Scott?
Is that for me or Michael?
Yes, that's for Beth. It's for Beth.
Yes,
sorry.
I do believe so. Yes, I think that's
yeah,
what
he spoke on this. Yeah, he spoke on the court steps about it. They're filing
uh-huh.
a civil suit against her,
and that's good because that way she cannot earn any money whatsoever from this crime. Can I just kind of roll back to Scott Peterson and Sharon for just a bit? Lacey's mom. We all fell in love with Lacey's mom. I can't think of anybody whose heart wasn't broken for Lacey's mom. And Beth, you did an interview with her with the 10th anniversary in December. How is she doing? What is she doing? Is she back at work? What's going on with Sharon?
She is. You know, she has grandchildren from her son,
mm-hmm.
and that's great. She's still in the house. I know the house that Lacey and Scott lived in was sold.
Right.
And she said, you know, she just makes the best of it, but every holiday season it's really hard for her,
mm-hmm.
As you can imagine, right? And
right.
when I talked to her last December, it was right after the Newtown school shooting in Connecticut. And I was in Newtown that night, December 14th, just that
mm-hmm.
night, and then I was on vacation after that, so I didn't have to do any other reporting on it, but I was there when the kids, their bodies were still in the school. When I talked to Sharon Rojo a week or so later, I asked her if she had any messages for these parents whose kids
mm-hmm.
were taken, you know, so cruelly, and, you know, life goes on, you know, just you got to find the strength and you move on for the sake of the rest of your family, too.
Right.
It is impossibly difficult. Everyone knows, I think, I lost my wife to cancer, and I just had her second year anniversary. And I had thought I had moved on a little bit. I knew I'm still very raw. But that, after once the cards started rolling in that week before Sunday the 11th,
mm-hmm.
I was brought to my knees, and there I stayed for that entire week. Sunday and Monday were as if it happened yesterday. So
right.
I don't know, and that's 2 years. She's had 10, but a heart that's been shattered.
Oh,
you know,
like
I
that.
I asked her if when she Scarred. Sees a 10-year-old, I asked Sharon, when she sees a 9 or a 10-year-old boy, which is how old Connor would be, you know, she thinks about him, and she said, you know, she has a grandson, you know, that age, and so she doesn't, you know, she just put it out of her mind. She never forgets them, but she doesn't think, oh, Connor would be that age. You can't, you know, she just
it would kill you.
Yeah,
it would kill you.
Yeah.
We're talking with Beth Karras from Wild About Trials, and we've reverted back to the Lacey Peterson trial because Beth did a great interview with Lacey's mother, Sharon. And we had somebody mention it in the chat room about Scott's parents. Now, Jackie Peterson was very ill. Is she? Do you know if she is still doing okay, or have you heard anything about Scott's parents?
Yeah, well, I haven't heard about anyone passing, but I haven't really snooped around on them. However, I'm going to San Diego on Wednesday. Maybe I should see what's up down there when I'm there for a couple of days. But I don't really have any update on Scott's family. I do periodically look online just to check the death row inmate roster in
mm-hmm.
California, because David Westerfield, whose case I covered in 2002, Scott Peterson 2 years later, they're both on death row, and I just wait to see, you know, what's going on with their cases. So
right.
they're both sitting there. You know.
Is anything going on with their
no,
cases, Beth?
No, Scott's appeal was filed, you know, sometime in the last year or so. I mean, he's got some good attorneys now out of San Francisco. It just took forever, you know, almost
mm-hmm.
10 years, right, to get his appeal filed. Probably about seven, eight years to get his appeal filed.
What about Amber Fry? Did Amber really name one of her children after Lacey in memory of Lacey, or a middle name? Is that just a rumor? Have you heard anything about that?
You know, I don't have any confirmation of that. But she, and I have not seen her since shortly after the trial when she was at Court TV, and we talked a little bit. But she's doing well. I heard she's got a family and married, and that's the last I knew. She was doing well, and I think she's still in the Fresno area, which is where she was from. And
yeah,
where
I don't think she was dating her. I don't think she's moved at all. So, okay, I'll tell you what, Beth, you can only stay for just an hour. We could take you on for all night long and just talk to you from day one, starting at HLN and Court TV. We want to hear all the backstories. We want to hear all the gossip. We love it. We could talk to you forever, but I agree that you would only be on for about an hour or so. So we're going to wrap it up. We're not going to. Well, I
Why
you know what?
I
that's
have
all I can,
any say in that.
That I talked to. I told her no. I said, Beth, no. It's 2 hours or nothing. And she said, okay, nothing. And I went, okay, an hour.
But I got to email you, Michael, the decision so that you can absorb it and explain next week what atrocious or no, depraved,
yes.
heinous,
depraved.
And depraved, heinous, and cruel are yes. under Arizona law.
Perfect.
Well, that'll be fine, but I have all week to get ready for that. Beth, you can't leave us. I wanted you to talk about Hernandez. I read about Hernandez.
Okay, let's talk about Hernandez for just a little bit, okay? Now, what the hell is up with this guy? I mean, he's arrested now, but he's for something else, for a weapons charge, I believe. Was that it? Or what's he under? But he's being charged with double murder, right?
Right. No, he's charged with murder of
Oh,
Ode
he is
Lloyd,
now. Okay, that's right. That's right.
A semi-pro
okay.
player, and that's for a shooting on June 17th.
And right.
the two guys who were with him are also charged, but not with murder. One accessory after the fact of murder, which is a crime that New York doesn't have, for example, but Massachusetts does. And then the third guy who was sitting in the back seat, he has an illegal possession
charge,
of a weapons
right?
charge. I think he's the one who's cooperating. Yeah. They're not confirming that, but there was a search warrant I read where he's giving statements to the police. So that's that. However, a gun was recovered recently that's been linked to a double homicide.
That's what I'm thinking of.
2012.
Yes, yeah, so he's right.
Yes, so that case is being built. He hasn't been charged with that double homicide. However, this is an important link in the case. So,
and that gun was
that
found in his house, right? It was found in his house.
No, that gun, okay, there were guns found in his house and in
okay.
an apartment in Franklin, Massachusetts, but the one connected to the 2012 double homicide was found in Western Massachusetts in a car or in a box that had been in a car of this woman who says, oh, yeah, last year I gave these guys a ride and they had luggage and they must have forgotten this box and they said they were football players. Okay.
The Hummer also, didn't the Hummer have a shell casing in it?
Are you talking about
identical?
Related to the Odin Lloyd, the recent shooting?
I thought it was related
no,
to
Hummer.
The 2012s.
Oh.
But maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it was the Altima that had it.
There were
so many murders, so little time.
The Altima. Yeah, there were casings in the Altima. Yeah, there was a casing underneath the driver's seat in the Altima, the rental car that Hernandez returned on the same day as the shooting. The shooting was at about 3:30, 3:25 in the morning on June 17th, so in the middle of the night. He returns the car about 5:30 that afternoon, and the shell casing is that matches the shell casings at the scene where the body was. One was in the car and then five outside the body.
Oh my God! What are these? What is he thinking? I mean, he had his whole life, you know, with the Patriots. I mean, he was set, and he just couldn't control himself. What? Why did he do this? Was it just pure anger? He's just, I mean, steroids, road rage. What is it?
The guy who was killed, and the girlfriend of the guy who was killed, and Aaron Hernandez's fiance, they're sisters. Okay, so that's the link between these two guys,
okay.
is they're dating sisters. And Odin Lloyd, the deceased, and Aaron Hernandez were out at a Boston nightclub called Rumor on the Sunday before the shooting, which was a couple days before. Sunday was Father's Day, and so the shooting was, I think, the next day or day after. And apparently Odin Lloyd was talking. No, I take that back. I'm sorry. They were at a nightclub the Friday before. The shooting
okay.
was on Monday.
Right.
They were at the Friday before. And apparently, Odin Lloyd was talking to some guys Hernandez had an issue with. And so he felt disrespected.
Oh, brother.
And I also heard that there's speculation that Odin Lloyd knew about Hernandez's involvement in the 2012 shooting, and it was Hernandez was motivated to silence him so he couldn't tell what he knew about that shooting in 2012. And I don't know if that's speculation. I think it was a reputable paper I read it from.
I hadn't heard that.
That well, boy, that would make a lot of sense.
Yeah, it would. I think it was. I think it might have been the Sports Illustrated article that I read.
Hmm. So what's
next? I guess
next?
I shouldn't call reputable. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, it's well. I would. I think Sports Illustrated would be fairly reputable. I really do. Beth, what's next in this case? Is where does it stand now? Hernandez has been arrested.
He was just indicted. The grand jury indictment was just filed. In fact, his lawyer hadn't even seen the indictment. It was filed, so he has to be arraigned on the murder and related weapons charges, because he possessed a number of unlicensed guns. So he's charged with these five weapons counts and then the murder. And so the arraignment, and it moves to a higher court, Superior Court in Massachusetts. So arraignment and then all the pretrial stuff, and then it'll move to trial. They do not have a death penalty in Massachusetts. But he is
I thought I read something about September 30th. Is that right, Beth? Where the...
You know, I hadn't read that... Day, but that sounds about right. Well, I would think that arraignment would be a little sooner than that. But I thought it was
a grand jury that was going to be looking at it.
The indictment was returned, yeah. See, it was set for Friday for a probable cause hearing or grand jury action, whichever. You know, if they didn't have a grand jury indictment, then they had to go forward the state with a probable cause hearing in front of a judge, and everybody would have seen the evidence, but they got the indictment. It's one or the other. You have one or the other. A grand jury indicts, or you do this probable cause hearing, which in some states they call a preliminary hearing. O.J. Simpson had a preliminary hearing. Conrad Murray had a preliminary hearing, not a grand jury.
Mm-hmm. So this whole murder case, just the one, not the one in 2012, the most recent one, could come down to Aaron Hernandez felt disrespected. And
that appears to be the motive. I mean, there could be more to it. Maybe what Michael's saying, also, he was silencing a witness. I don't know. That isn't anything I've read in the police documents and the search warrants that have been released to the public and the affidavits in support of the search warrants. Police reports haven't been released, but affidavits in support of search warrants. I have not seen that, but it doesn't mean that it's not true.
Right.
And, you know, the state never has to prove motive. Unless it's a bias crime, to show somebody's motivated by somebody's sexual orientation or race or gender or whatever. But other than that, you never have to prove motive. If you can give the jury a reason why a nonsensical, stupid, senseless murder happened, it's good, but you don't have to. It's not an element of the crime.
Right, but most juries want to hear that. They want to hear why the person did what they did. And I think that just what I've seen, the prosecution always tries to give the jury a why. But this, all murders are senseless, but this one, it just
makes me
sick. It
was an execution. He's like shot in the chest and the torso five times. And
Right. Basically
Hernandez was the only one who walked out of the car with Odin Lloyd, shot him, got back in, and they drove half a mile to Hernandez's house or a mile away or something. Wallace and Ortiz stayed in the car, if you believe them. You know, Ortiz is the one who's talking,
Right.
Maybe one of them did the shooting, and they're fingering Hernandez. I don't know.
If you believe him. That's the truth. But
What a mess.
It is. It's a mess, and it just makes me sick. Of course, the Patriots are saying even if he's found not guilty of everything, he's not coming back. He's just way too much trouble. Oh,
well,
Beth.
He shot a guy's eye out in Florida last year.
Oh,
right?
That's
he's got a
right.
for that, too. Yeah,
oh,
got
so
a fight with somebody at a club, and guy
he's just a mess. He's just a mess of a human being.
Yeah, I don't know if he shot him, but this guy lost an eye in a fight with Hernandez. I seem to think it was a shooting, but I'm not sure.
Oh my gosh. Well, okay, Michael. Last chance to ask Beth questions. I promised her an hour. We have 1 minute to go before the hour.
I want to ask her if she'll extend that for 15 minutes.
Oh, Michael.
I know. She does have to go. I do know this. She has a prior engagement, and Beth, I know you could stay, or you would stay if you could, but you did say you had something you had to be to. Otherwise,
yeah.
But here's what we can do, Michael. We can guilt trip her into promising to come back, like, in the next few weeks, maybe, after your vacation?
Yeah, sure. I'll come back.
Okay,
yeah.
Good. See,
also, I launched a website, too, Tricia, BethTerris.com.
Oh.
Well, I was about Trials Only part-time, so BethTerris.com,
okay.
But there's not that much on it. But, well, my
no, there
talk
isn't.
About me is on it, but my blog is brand new, and most of the things I put on my blog are on Wild About Trial, too, right now as I'm starting to gear up, but I'm going to start putting up video, too.
But it's BethTerris.com, BethTerris.com,
yep.
Right?
BethTerris.com.
Okay.
I want to say something, though. I want my chance back to say something.
Okay, you have it. You have it. Don't worry, you have it.
Beth, I follow you on Twitter, so would you do me a favor and maybe start tweeting a bit more?
Yes, you know what? Everybody
just for
tells
Michael.
Me that. You're right. I'm terrible, aren't I? I'm so terrible about
no.
it. You know what? My attitude is nobody wants to hear from me, but I guess you do, huh?
Oh, I'm telling Beth. I mean, Michael, how many times do we say how much everybody, including us, absolutely love? We love Beth. We absolutely adore
Beth.
Her.
I talk
I know.
About her every day, probably.
Oh, you're
you
so sweet. Well, here's the problem. When I'm in New York and I'm not, like, in the courtroom, I feel like I'm not there. I'm not giving you some color. I got to be there. You know, I almost went down to court when the nanny case was on in New York. Yocelyn Ortega, the woman who killed those two little kids, the nanny.
Oh,
remember
yeah.
that story?
Yes. Oh.
So if I get down to Manhattan, I'll be in the courtroom, and I can say, I'm looking at Yocelyn. She doesn't look crazy to me, and this is what's happening in her case. But, I feel like I should be in the courtroom giving you some good stuff. And
oh,
I'm
not
Beth. Right
you could just update with what you're doing that day and, you know, keep us up to date if you're going to be on Jane Velez or Nancy or
okay.
any of that. We need to know everything about you.
And if, you ever, if you ever want
to
come on.
I've got to practice great restraint to not
yes,
break
you, do.
You every day.
Yeah, see, that's how adored you are, Beth. And Beth, if you ever want to come on and just, you know, let loose with some good, juicy gossip, we love it. We love it. Just let us know what the heck's going on, you know. Tell
all
us
right.
the stuff from the beginning, you know, stuff that doesn't matter now but we'll find interesting because I have no life and I love to listen to it. So we really could listen to you talk day and night. So anytime.
Oh, you're so kind.
You're welcome,
all
Beth.
Right. Michael,
so
I'll tweet
back.
More because I put on Facebook. I post on Facebook more than tweet, but I promise to tweet more. And I'm on Nancy Grace tomorrow and then the Snapped interview Tuesday for a future airing on Jodi Arias. But I'll start posting.
And Beth,
thank you.
You will come back.
I appreciate it.
You will come back when you get back from vacation. You have another hour or two to spend with us on a Sunday night. We'll have you back real soon, okay?
Great. Thank you so much.
Well,
it was really nice chatting. Remember Dominic Dunn tomorrow.
Yes,
I
Dominic
loved him, and that brought a tear to my eye. Thank you for reminding
yeah.
me about that.
Absolutely.
I loved
okay.
him. Nancy loved him, too.
Great guy.
Beth, thank you so
okay.
much.
Okay, take care.
Thank
bye.
You, Beth.
Bye-bye.
Take
okay.
care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, BethKaris.com or WildAboutTrial.com. Okay, Michael, now, Beth's going to write you. That's no fair. We need to know. We need to know everything because, you know, we just do.
I
don't know
will,
if she's
I will... I will save the email, I'll cherish it, and then I'll share everything she says or what the content, unless she gets personal, of course, you know.
Then, right, exactly. Okay, Michael, once again, thank you so much for joining me tonight. I really appreciate it. You are my unofficial co-host. Every week you'll be here by my side asking the good questions that I forget to ask. So thank you, my darling. I do appreciate you.
Thank you.
And to everybody in the chat room, love you guys. Thank you so much. Do remember, opinions expressed on Trisha's True Crime Radio are those of the hosts and guests. And Trisha's True Crime Radio is a completely separate entity from WebSleuth.com, LLC, and ForumsForJustice.org. So if you hear an opinion that you don't like, remember, it's the opinion of the person who said it. You don't get angry at WebSleuth or Forums for Justice. Trisha's True Crime Radio is brought to you by your local no-kill animal shelter. Go to www.nokillnetwork.org and find your local no-kill shelter. You could do something as easy as volunteering an hour a week to help out. That's www.nokillnetwork.org. It's Trisha's True Crime Radio, where we discuss true crime and current events, and we always do it with common sense. Good night, everyone.